King of glory, the King above all kings. This is amazing grace. This is unfailing love.
Let's pray. Dear God, thank you. Thank you for all of it. Thank you for this day. Thank you for those of us here at home, everywhere we are. Keep our eyes open, our ears open, our hearts open to you. We love you. Amen. All right. So, today's going to be an interesting day. Has anybody ever done a puzzle in their life? Okay, I do these puzzles every now and again. I don't like to do them, but I do them. And they're what's called a mosaic. Does anybody know what a mosaic puzzle is? It is a puzzle that's made up of all kinds of little pictures. Like if you do a 1,000-piece puzzle, there's a different little picture on each piece. So like, let's just say, for example, you're doing a Boba Fett puzzle. Each piece has a different scene from one of the Star Wars movies. And it's this neat puzzle that all comes together to make a bigger picture. But if you just look at one piece, it's awesome. It's a cool scene, and there's a lot to talk about each scene. But you would have no idea, you'd have no guess at all that you're doing a Boba Fett puzzle until it's all done together. Same thing with this year, 2020. Like, today is awesome, right? Today's a great day. Today feels good when we get up. It's cool. We can open the windows. Everything is awesome today, and everything feels right. But when you take a step back and look at 2020, it's a dumpster fire. It's been one of those things where the wheels have fallen off on the earth, and you need that step back from time to time to see what you're doing here. And the writers of the scriptures are the same kind of thing. They're writing, and we can do things verse by verse, which is what we do, but sometimes, did you ever hear the saying, we miss the forest for the trees? It means you're looking this close and you don't take a step back and see everything that they're doing. It works on so many different levels. So that's what we're doing today. This letter of 1 John has been taking us apart every single week. He has been coming at us with these things that say something like, if you don't do this, you can't do this, or you're lying when you say you're doing this. That's been kind of the pattern for us. So why? Why is he doing this? Why is it hurt? Because we think about John as a different kind of guy. Like, if Paul's doing that, if Paul's just taking us apart verse after verse, that makes a little bit of sense. John, not so much. So what's John doing? So that's what we're going to do today. We're about halfway through chapter 2. And what we're going to do is get to verses 12 to 14 at the end. So you can open your Bibles at any point here. But first, we're going to see what's been happening. And this message today is called Tests. And why? There's three tests. And it's kind of one of those things. Let's just say there was a virus that had taken over the whole globe. And let's say you wake up in the morning and you have to have your temperature taken before you go into work. Right? The idea of that is the way that you're asking on a daily basis, am I healthy? Right? It's like a thermometer. It's like when you look up your symptoms online. When you go to WebMD, you look up, am I healthy? So John knows how we are. Maybe this is not the right question to be asking, because in light of the gospel, which says all kinds of about comparison and about asking if you're enough and all that kind of stuff, he kind of puts those aside because he knows that we're going to ask this question. And it can be very, very important from time to time to say, or on an everyday basis, to say, am I healthy? Is my faith healthy? Am I healthy spiritually? And what he'll say is my faith a, quote, genuine faith? That's what these tests are about. Is my faith healthy? And last week I said it was probably one of the most important messages that we've ever talked about here, because it was about loving people, about doing everything, if we're clanging cymbals or if we're moving in love, if we're acting out of love. That's the most important, one of the most important things we can think about. Now today, though, it's one of the most practical ones that we can ask ourselves on a regular basis and kind of see if we're on the narrow path, right? Because there's a path, there is a, my very good friend Jay Finch calls it the skinny path, and I love that. So are we on the skinny path? Is our faith healthy? And it goes back to that question, are the things that we say we believe the things we actually believe? All of these questions are ones that really need to be answered on a regular basis, because it's really, really easy to get off the path. It's really, really easy to let the demands of the world run you right over. Run you right over. It's really, really easy to let yourself be just covered. You know those blankets? They make blankets now that are made of lead or something. They're called heavy blankets that you put on your bed and they just smoosh you down and they're wonderful to sleep with, right? But the world can feel like that. The world can just smoosh you down and to where all you feel is that heavy blanket on you. And we have to be really, really careful about that. We might think we're on the skinny path, but there is that verse, that really, really verse we don't like to talk about that says the human heart is deceitful, which calls into question all the things that our culture says. Follow your heart. Follow your heart. Well, yeah, but what if my heart's deceitful? What if my heart is leading me off the skinny path? Then what? Now, John is speaking right to that. Right to us in 2020, right to them in 34 or 58 or whenever he was writing, right to everyone at any point. How's your faith? How's your faith? Is it healthy? Is it a healthy faith? Three tests. The first one is the truth test. The truth test. Now, the next one, here are the verses that we're talking about. In 1 John 1:6, if we say we have fellowship with him while we walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. Second one, if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. That's verse 8. And then in verse 10, if we say we've not sinned, we make him a liar and his word is not in us. Okay? Those are the things that he's confronting us with. And Daryl Dash says these are all negative tests, right? Because he's saying, all of the things, if we say we have no sin, see, when you have a no or not or something like that, those are negative tests that we're doing. If we hold these beliefs, John says, it shows that we're in serious trouble and that our faith is not genuine. So what do these negative tests hold in common? They all deny the reality and the severity of our sinful condition. Okay? You remember we talked about the order of the scriptures. This is number one, our condition. John says, if we pretend that this isn't a problem, if we say that this isn't a problem, that we're okay, that we're right on, we've got it all together, we're not that bad. If we say those things, if we deny this fact, this condition, or that it's as big of a problem as it is, if we in any way don't acknowledge the truth of the situation, it's a lie. And the faith isn't real. This is what John said. The faith isn't real. I would say the faith in Jesus alone isn't quite genuine. We might have faith in Jesus, but not Jesus alone, right? That's the thing. That's the thing, right? Because then it becomes a gospel of me too, right? Of, yeah, it's Jesus and it's Jesus plus me. It's a faith plus, right? Dash says, genuine faith begins with admitting the truth about ourselves, that we are sinners, and that the problem of our sin is serious and deadly. It's like we talked about before. If I owe you $5 and you say, don't worry about it, it's not that big of a deal, right? If I owe you $5 million and you say, don't worry about it, that's a really, really big deal. Right? If our transgression, if our mistakes, if our fallenness is shallow, the gift isn't that big. Right? Jesus' work is far less significant. Right? It's the order of scriptures. We know the condition, we know the gift. If the condition's huge, the gift is bigger, and then the response that comes from that is it requires a response from us. If the condition's tiny, the gift is tiny, and then so what? Then so what? Why would we change anything about our lives, right? Why would we? Now, not only that, not only do we recognize that, do we see how big the condition problem is, but genuine faith also receives the cure. See, there's two parts of this. We also receive the cure that God has given for sin. And John also talks about those. If we confess our sin, he's faithful and just to forgive us and to cleanse us, right? The forgiveness gets us back up to zero. The cleansing gets us up to righteousness. See, it's two parts. My little children, I'm writing these things to you so that you may not sin. But if anyone does, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous. He's the propitiation, which means he's the replacement for our sins, and not for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. Genuine faith understands the seriousness of sin and also accepts God's solution. This is the truth. This is the gospel. This test is also other places called the belief or the doctrinal test. Now, when we say doctrinal, there's a thing in faith circles that's called doctrine. And that is like if you sat down and wrote down every single thing that's important, every bullet point that what we believe, that's doctrine. Okay? You with me so far? Remember, this is a letter that's being written to combat heresy. So the question that it's asking over and over and over is, who is Jesus and what is the gospel? This is all tied up in the condition, which is the truth test, and the solution, who Jesus is and what he did, right? 1 John 1 and 2 calls him our advocate and talks about being the propitiation. Gnosis, Gnosticism, is the main heresy that they're fighting against here. And what that says is that you have to believe certain things, know certain things, do certain things, be certain things, right? If you have to do that, if you have to know special knowledge, if you have to get a bunch of letters after your name, if you have to write out a resume that says how awesome you are and attain certain knowledge and you have to get somewhere, you have to be more and more and more awesome, sorry to say, that's how people work. That's how we work. That's how you get ahead in your job. But that is not even close to the gospel of Jesus. Not at all. That is the gospel of me. Right? Truth test. What is your gospel? What is the gospel? And all taken together, we have the gospel, we have truth, and we have a faith test. Okay? That's number one. Do you have your belief system together? Do you understand what happened? Do you understand the condition and the cure? The condition and the rescue? Do you understand that you're in trouble and that you've been rescued? That's the truth test. If any of those things get sideways, everything about our faith is upside down. And then we get into things like gnosis, Gnosticism, and we get into things like the prosperity gospel and things like that that say the more we do, the more Jesus will do for us because we make him on some level. Right? It's a vending machine. It's Santa Claus. It's that kind of thing. Okay? You with me? All right, that's number one. Now number two, this is the one none of us want to talk about. The obedience test. Right? Dash also says, we are not saved by our obedience. I use his quote because you don't want to hear me say that again. Right? Because I say it all the time. We are not saved. And if Daryl Dash says it, then maybe you'll believe me, right? Whoever Daryl Dash is. We are not saved by our obedience. Nobody apart from Jesus is good enough to be accepted by God on the basis of obedience. We are saved by his obedience, not ours. And anything other than that is a word that the Bible talks about all the time that starts with an I and rhymes with idolatry. Right? That's what that is. When I have to do stuff for God to rescue me, that's idolatry. That's back to the gospel of me. That's about how awesome I am that forces Jesus to do something. Right? That's a vending machine. That's you put enough money in and he'll do anything for you. That's why in all over the scriptures it says you're going to have trouble. You're going to have trouble in the world because no matter how good you are, you're not good enough to make me do anything for you. Jesus was the only one, right? So anything where that gets mixed up, where it becomes about, look, listen to how awesome I am. I heard there's a quote in a book that says, you got to remind God how awesome you are to make him do so. And I think, what? That's a spiritual book. That's in the religion section of the library. okay? So I would suggest that you stay away from that book. Okay? So anyway, moving on. We are saved by grace through faith on the basis of what Jesus has done for us. Not what I have done for me. Prodigal son. That guy comes back. The father runs out to meet him and doesn't say, "What have you done, man? What have you done? Where's your heart before we come in and have this party? Let me just see where you are." He doesn't. He goes and gets him and says, "Come in for the party." We'll talk about all that stuff later. Okay? It's Jesus. It's Jesus. But genuine, now here's where it gets a little bit squirrely for us that we don't like. That we'll turn it off. Okay? But genuine faith always results in obedience. And so John says that obedience is a test of genuine faith. This is number three in the order that we've been talking about. And if you've been following the blogs, we're talking about how that's been the series lately. We're talking about what a response looks like. But the point is the order is set up. Here's the problem. Here's the solution. And now what do you get to do? What do you get to do with that wonderful news? The good news. That's what the gospel is. That's what it translates to. Good news. This is great news. To expect you to get it all together, to expect you to get it all right and be just wonderful and perfect, that's not good news. That's bad news because we can't. That's bad news. So all of those things, those gospel, those Jesus plus faith systems, they're bad news. They're bad news. And that's why we all feel yucky coming out of those places, because they've just told us that we're never going to be good enough because they need us to be perfect. And I can't be perfect. Right? Okay. This is number three, our response from it. And John says in chapter 2, verse 2 to 6, "Whoever says, 'I know him,' but does not keep his commandments is a liar." Now, if you keep all the commandments, are you automatically saved? No. It's Jesus alone, not Jesus plus keeping all the commandments, okay? This is a response, right? My wife married me, and now I do the dishes because she likes me to do the dishes, okay? That's a response. That's a response to loving her. That's not why she married me, I hope, or else our marriage isn't going to make it. Right? Okay, moving on. And the truth is not in him, but whoever keeps his word, in him truly the love of God is perfected. By this we may know that we are in him. Whoever says he abides in him ought to walk in the same way in which he walked. We talked about that last week. That doesn't mean you have to be perfect. That just means you have to be on the path. Moving forward, right? And Dash says again, at first glance, this is a shocking test. The test of genuine faith is that we keep God's commands. If you don't keep God's commands, you don't have genuine faith. You have a knockoff, a cheap imitation. It's not the real thing. For 12 years, G worked for a very, very high, 13, 11. G worked for a very, very high-end watch company that is knocked off all the time. If you go somewhere and somebody opens up their jackets and has all the watches, those might not be real watches. I used to buy tons and tons of CDs. Tons and tons of CDs when CDs were a thing. And I would get them and they would be bootlegs. They were cheap knockoffs that wouldn't sound good. You could hear the crowd noise. You couldn't hear the band. You couldn't see. I got a Red Hot Chili Peppers video once, and you couldn't really see it because it was the screen was moving because it wasn't an authorized thing. It was a cheap imitation, right? And sometimes we settle for cheap imitations, right? How many people knock those watches off all the time because we sometimes settle, right? So sometimes we settle for less than the gospel, because there's something that we get in return. The gospel costs everything. Like her watches, they're expensive. I don't wear one of her, th- the company she used to work for watches. The gospel costs everything. If it doesn't, it might be a cheap knockoff, right? It might be counterfeit money. It might be t-shirts outside the stadium, right? Looks like the real thing is not the real thing, okay? Now, again, back to Gnosticism. Everybody saw Jesus at the time, what he was going against. They saw Jesus as a source of secret knowledge who could get them. Jesus was the source of secret knowledge that could give them the secret knowledge that would get them to heaven. Okay? Following Jesus meant that you were set up for eternity, but you didn't really have to worry too much about what you do now. It was more about a religious experience than a change in lifestyle. Does that sound familiar? That stings, doesn't it? This is cracking with 2020, right? This is cracking and just electric with how timely these things are. It was more about a religious experience than a relationship, right? It was more about that thing that we could get than about what we could give or than what we would have. Like, if I married my wife just for the things she could do, what kind of marriage is that? That's nothing. It shouldn't even be called marriage. It happens all the time, but it shouldn't be called. There should be a different kind of word for that. Marriage is a relationship, man, where we get into it and we love each other and we have that zim-zum that we give and receive and we move and things like that and we do these things for each other. There's a response. It's not just what we can get. And that's what it means by religious experience. It's gross. And it sounds really, really familiar. But John is frank. If you don't obey Jesus, you don't have genuine faith. Genuine faith always changes how we live. If it doesn't change our lives, it's just not that big of a deal. Baseball, we didn't have baseball on TV for a little bit. Now, I like to watch baseball well enough, but I hardly missed it. Baseball back on TV doesn't change my life at all. Now, sports, that all the sports were gone, I like to watch sports. I love to watch sports. I really like Sports Center. I like to know what's going on. So that changed my life a little. When I married my wife, that changed my life a lot. Right? You know what I mean? We only change our lives if something is important enough. And you can see it. If it's very important, it can be a big change. Right? I go to the gym early, okay? That's important to me. I go to bed early because I go to the gym in the morning. That's important to me, okay? You with me? If I'm not willing to make those changes, going to the gym really isn't that important to me. If I'm staying up till 1 or 2 in the morning, and if I get up, if I feel like going to the gym, maybe the gym isn't just that important to me. If we say we follow Jesus, and our lives look exactly the same as they did before, maybe it just doesn't matter quite as much as we say it does. That hurts. Me too. I don't like those words. But man, that's the truth. That's absolutely the truth. If I was a guy who was going out to bars every single night and staying there until they close, okay, then I met my wife and we got in a committed relationship, and then we started to think about getting married together. And I was still going to the bars every night until 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I was wasted the next day, and I wasn't spending any time with her. Is she really that important to me? Nope. But I really love her. Nope. Maybe not. Maybe not as much as I think or say. Now, I often used to say, faced with the truth of the gospel, when I used to say it's Jesus plus nothing, okay? you don't have to do anything. I used to say, you don't have to do anything, right? Because Jesus did everything. The question that I would always get is with people that would stand like this. So I get to do anything I want? So what you're saying is I can do anything I want? And at first I used to be like, well, you got to understand and all this stuff. But then I just realized that the answer to that is yes. So now they come up. So you're telling me I can do anything I want? Yep. And then I wait. That's right. And then they look, well, what about this? And I went, no, what you're missing is the want changes. Jesus saves you, and then what happens is he changes that want. Okay? If what you want is still not the things of God, the gift isn't that big. The gift isn't that awesome. It's just not that significant. If we're not doing anything because of the gift, maybe we don't appreciate the gift that much. When I get my kids a big gift for Christmas, I get them a big, years ago, it was an Imagine X Tyrannosaurus Rex, and it was awesome. And it was in a bag because we couldn't wrap it. It was big. And I gave it to them, and they go, Dad! And they run at me and hug me and say, thank you. Okay? Then, after that, they open the socks, and they go, what's next? No, the socks were the big one. You see what I mean? Same thing. If we see Jesus as socks, who changes their life for socks? Okay. Stormy O'Martian, and I think I'm pronouncing that right. Does anybody know who that is? Okay, she's a famous author. She said, trust that God has your best interests in mind and be willing to do what he asks of you, even if you don't understand why. Right? Obedience starts with having a heart that says yes to God. Right? How many of us look at the commands of God in the scriptures? Now, you don't have to follow them. Right? That you're not saving yourself if you keep them all, but how many of us go, well, I don't really like that. I don't think that applies anymore. Why does God say that? Why does God say we can't eat shellfish? Right? That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I can tell you why, but I'm not. I don't care. Okay? But the truth is, our first posture should be, it doesn't matter why he asks. How many times you ask, kid, go clean your room. Why? The other day I said to Samuel, come help me move. Come over to the neighbor's house to move. And what's his first question? Why? Does it matter? I asked you. Now, he didn't say it with the attitude that I just gave him right there. He wanted to know if he should come right away, if he should have his shoes on, if I was going to make him run that kind of thing. That's a legit question. But when our first question of God is, why? Maybe we're missing it. The first thing we do is say yes. Then we can talk about why. Then we can talk about why, because sometimes there's a why that's bigger than we think, and that might be really, really interesting to us, and it might matter for what we do after that. Moving on. Number three. The love test. The love test. This is the one final test, and it's the big one. It's the big one. When I was in college, well, when I was in high school too, there were times you could do really, really well all year, and the final was weighted so heavy that if you did well all year and failed the final, you're taking that class again, man. This is that one. This is that final. This is that final. You have a great semester. It's really, really possible to fail the class. Okay. What are the verses? Whoever says he's in the light and hates his brother is still in the darkness. Whoever loves his brother abides in the light, and in him there is no cause for stumbling. But whoever hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he's going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Sometimes we don't even know what we don't know, right? Because we're in such darkness. Now, do you ever see those posts on Facebook or Instagram, whatever, and the caption is, I'll just leave this right here. Has anybody ever seen that? It's like a bomb that goes off. You lay this awesome meme down and you go, I'm just going to put this here and let you think about it for a little. This is that meme, okay? So I'm just going to read for a little and I'm just going to put this right here. Let's keep this simple. You can have genuine faith if you love fellow believers. Again, this is shocking. If you claim to be a Christian and you're not part of a church, you can't claim to pass this test. You can't know for sure that you have genuine faith. If we're angry and bitter towards a believer who has wronged us, we can't know that we have genuine faith. If we hold racist beliefs, there's every reason to conclude that we don't have genuine faith. If we can't stand certain people in church and avoid them, we can't know that we have genuine faith. On the other hand, if we engage in the life of the church and enter the mess of genuine loving relationship, then that is a valuable piece of evidence that we have genuine faith. A boy once walked to D.L. Moody's church in Chicago, passed by another church where an older man asked him, "Why do you walk so far and pass so many churches on the way?" The boy's answer said it all. "Well, you see, sir, they have a way of loving a fellow over there." That is a church that seems to have genuine faith. See, we just leave that right there. And then we take a step back and we look at it. And if our posture isn't, then maybe we're missing it. I mean, maybe we're missing it. There's three tests. And again, it's about the order. If we get the doctrine right, we learn, then we respond. We do based on what we now know and the gift that we've been given. We are doing based on the gift that we've been given, that we just learned. And then we go to the third one because we get so wrapped up in doing, right? We get so wrapped up in checklists. And if I did it enough, and if I did enough of these things, right? And I do things and that's all that needs to happen. I read my Bible every... How many people do that? How many times have you heard that? What's your relationship with God? Well, I read my Bible every day and I do this and I do this and I do this and I do this. We get so wrapped up in doing, we forget why, and we mistake the doing and the knowing for the point, right? We miss the whole point of everything. And that is to make sure that it is all done in what? Love. What's next? We circle back to the very beginning. We love because he first loved us. The truth test says he loves us first. He did it all first, right? And we move from that to do some certain things, and we do them all in love because of what we learned in step one, test one. He loves us. We do because he loves us, and we do everything in love because he loved us. See how this works? It's a God of order, which is why everything makes sense in the end, right? It's tough stuff, though. It's tough stuff, this correction. If today hasn't left you wide open and a little bit in that place where you go, oh man, I don't have the genuine faith, which is where I've been for 3 weeks doing this, going, how am I going to get up there? What am I going to do? How am I going to talk to these people about this? Because I'm not having genuine faith. La, 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 la. Right? We can be pretty beaten down, right? Hopefully you don't look at it like you're beaten down. What you look at it like is that you're just wide open. That means you are on the path. Cool, right? If you don't care, if you walk out of here and go, ah, that was nice. Those shorts he was wearing was really nice, and I like the tone of his voice today, and all that, and those red shoes, man, they're perfect. And it was nice to have the windows open. Then it doesn't matter. You're not on the path anyway, right? Right? But if it hurts and you go, oh, I'm really losing it, congratulations. You're on the path, man. You're on the path. So you're wide open. You're evaluating you. And you're coming up short. Okay? And John knows it. John knows it. Which is why he starts the beginning saying, when you sin, this is what you do about it. Because everybody's coming up short here. So John knows it. And so what does John follow up all these tests with? I am writing to you, my dear children, because your sins have been forgiven because of Jesus. I am writing to you who are mature because you know Christ. Not you will know Christ, because you know Christ, the one who's from the beginning. I'm writing to you who are young because you have won your battle. Not you will, because you have won your battle with Satan. I have written to you, children, because you have known the Father. I've written to you who are mature because you know Christ, the one who's from the beginning. I've written to you who are young because you're strong with God's word living in your hearts and you've won your battle. That's what he does. Encouragement, man. He just opened us all up and then gives it to us. And then says, hey, don't forget any of this. This is the reminder where we start. Where the whole story starts. He's opening us up and then he's saying, now that you're wide open, what's the most true thing about you? What's the most true thing about you in the deepest, deepest parts of you? And where we can find that is in Genesis 1 and 2. Right? You know, I spent half of my life hating the Bible. And I spent the next half just falling in love more and more every day with it. We keep going back to Genesis 1 and 2 saying, you are made in the image of God, and you are very good. You know Christ, and you've won your battle. Yeah, that hurts. Yeah, that hurts. Pull it back. Pull it back together. Get back on the skinny path. But don't forget that it's not about you. Do you notice all the things that I just read? Because you know God. Because God has forgiven you. You haven't done anything here. You've won your battle because of what God has done through, in and through and for you. Ah, it's so great. You are valued. You are loved. You are accepted. Next one. Who, baby? For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. Right? Right? That's the story. That's the story, and you can't forget it. We cannot miss the point. Right? The Bible exposes. The Bible breaks us. The Bible lays bare. And then the Bible heals us. And then the Bible puts back together all of those broken pieces into something awesome. Have you ever seen a mosaic? Not a mosaic puzzle necessarily, but like that thing where you break all the plates and then you glue them all back together and it becomes something much more beautiful than that stinky old plate that's been sitting in the closet forever. Right? It becomes something new and wonderful. That's what the Bible does. It throws us on the ground and says, hey, look about what about this? And then it puts it all back together much better, much better. So this week, there's a lot to think about. There's three tests. And I would suggest that maybe every day, at least once a week, we start to go, am I healthy? Am I healthy? We are willing to check our temperature every single day. We are willing, before we go into work, to stop and go, all right, am I achy? How do I feel? Are these just allergies or do I have COVID? Right? Can I go to work? We are willing to do all of that. How much more willing could we be with our faith, with the state of our hearts, with the state of our souls? Right? Is our faith healthy? Right? And then when we do, we are invited to sit in that conflicted, convicted space, right? We are invited to sit there. We are not conflicted and convicted to sit in shame. If that shame is there, that's not coming from God. There is no shame in God. That's our baggage that we bring to the party. Okay, leave that out. Leave that out. It's not about shame. Not about shame. But then The Bible doesn't leave you there, and Jesus sure doesn't. What's the last one that we have here? But God proves his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You think you've messed it all up? Not that much. Not that much. While we were still broken, while we were still not on the skinny path, Christ died for us. Christ gave everything for us. You are still loved no matter what you've done, no matter how far you've gone away. But we're not supposed to stay there. Right? We're not supposed to stay there. We were never supposed to stay there. The prodigal son wasn't supposed to be eating from a pig trough somewhere, going, I'm still loved, and keep eating from the pig trough, right? There's a party. There's a party. Why is he eating from the pig trough when there's a party for him? Right? We are convicted to transform. So be open. We need to be open to that transformation. This transformation, this healing, this what John calls genuine faith is the key to this transformation. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, it says in Romans, right? This whole genuine faith, these tests are the key to that. And in that transformation, what you can do just what Sam did and keep asking why. And what you do is you say, why? Why are we transformed? Why are we doing these tests? And why are we transformed? And the reason is because there, in that transformation, in that healing, is life. Okay. Amen. Here, let me get this for you. See, I'm trying to be much more helpful around here. Around the house.
Release your miracles, your never-ending power.
You're faithful forever. You're faithful then. You're faithful now. You're faithful forever. You're faithful.
I just have one thing that I want to. You can sit down. This might be most well. It might be mostly for people who are watching from home, but we haven't had communion since January or February, and some of us really, really feel that. And I it's such a valuable time that we can come to the table and where we can express ourselves. It's not magic or anything like it. It's just that place where we can come and say yes and commune. So we're going to do that next week at this time. And I'm not sure exactly what that's going to look like. There may be an interesting new twist. But we're going to do it at the end of the service, okay? So if you want to be a part of it, anyone at home or here, you can take the bread and the juice that I give you, or you can bring your own, okay, to this place. But at home, obviously I can't give it to anyone at home. So have something ready. Have something ready, and we can go to that space together. Okay, I think that's really, really important. So next week we're going to do that. So if you come here, obviously we are in it's a different world, and you don't have to participate if you don't want to. But next week at the end of the service, that is exactly what we're going to do. Okay? Does everybody understand? Any questions or anything like that, reach out to me. Just whatever you need to do, and I will hopefully have answers for you. So that's that. Here's my card. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Everybody have an awesome week. At the end of the messages, there will be somebody up front for prayer. If you need it, if you want it, if you want to just share some time. Have an awesome week. Love you guys.